potential for age range on the average of $600,000 with some serious injuries. The insurance company offers $400,000. He knows in order to try that case, it's going to cost him $20,000 to $30,000 of cost just to get it forced to settlement to $400,000. He may lose the case and not recover any of those costs. I think an altruistic attitude may be that, yeah, he'll do it because it's his job to do it. But the realistic attitude, I think, is different than that. And I think, realistically, that legislation would seriously affect the rights of the victim. Thank you.
One sentence by way of summing up for the opponents, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bill Gaylord for the record again. We haven't attempted to address everything wrong with this bill, but it is our collective position that everything is wrong with this bill. There's nothing about it that we think is passable.
Thank you. Certainly want to thank proponents and opponents for those that came from out of town and out of state, a couple of instances, for your testimony being with us today. We'll close the hearing now on House Bill 2980. We have more work to do, committee, and my intent to keep on going until we finish our agenda. We'll take up House Bill 2222 first, and I think we'll kind of stand at ease for a minute. I think some folks will be leaving the room and picking up some charts.
They should invite you to the annual bar convention.
Well, I went to one while we came early on, and there were maybe three wives in there. I really did wonder if that's an area that went.
She replaced a woman in the
It was interesting that today was very much a male dominated group. There were a couple of OB-GYN doctors speaking to women only, and that was it.
Oregon probably was just meeting about the horse and then.
Just curious if there was any reason. Taking all our entertainment.
Jane Edwards has been here all afternoon.
Yeah, she just left right when the last guy came up. I think she is.
Do you want to?
I can go over her phone.
Do you want to bring us up to date?
Sure.
Oh, House Bill 2222.
House Bill 2222, Mr. Chairperson. You have a thick stack of papers in front of you, and what you have are really three sets of amendments. The first set that are 38 odd pages, are from Jane Edwards, the Corporation Commissioner, and the revisions in line with some of the suggestions we talked about at our last work session. A second set of amendments would be an amendment to Section 83, amending ORS 465.100. This is proposed by the Department of Justice, and it relates to the transfer of files from the Corporation Division to the Department of Justice, those files concerning bingo and lotto games. And if you recall, up until this time, all bingo and lotto games have to be filed with the Corporation Commission. And the last item is a letter, two-page letter from Mr. Tom Gilbert, dated May 1st, 1985, concerned with another section of the bill, Section 3B, having to do with here's the commission right now. Having to do with the prima facie evidence of records.
Is Mr. Wood here also?
Yes.
From the Department of Justice.
And so those are the three amendments. Mr. Chairperson, you had asked me at our last meeting to check with other concerned persons about the acceptability of these amendments. And Mr. Bernal and Mr. McCulley agreed to the commissioner's 39 pages of amendments. They have no problem with that.
I don't think I've read all of this quite yet, but the question I have would be whether there are any policy changes as a result of these.
Ms. Edwards?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bunn, no, there are no policy changes different than those we discussed with amendments. Let me say the reason these are so lengthy is there's been a lot of trying to conform and get consistency in language to a number of ORS chapters. And frankly, we go through this every time and we say, hey, we made a little mistake here. These do not reflect policy changes.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bellamy.
Are you ready for a motion on the amendments?
Could I ask just a, almost, Ms. Edwards, I'm sorry. The Department of Justice amendments, are they, do they replace Section 83? Or maybe I should ask Mr. Wood.
Mr. Chairman, Timothy Wood, the attorney in charge of the financial fraud section of the Department of Justice. Your question is whether it replaces Section 83. My answer would be yes. It adds to Section 83 in a sense. Section 83, as proposed in the House Bill 2222, transferred the notification function of bingo and lotto games to the Oregon Department of Justice. What this particular provision does is says that if, in fact, the legislature is going to change the notification requirement and require the Department of Justice to take these notices, that we should have rulemaking authority to require the organizations to provide what information we deem relevant and to keep particular relevant or records that we deem relevant.
New twist. Bill. Representative Bellamy, why don't I recognize, why don't we treat Department of Justice amendments separately? I would entertain a motion on the Corporation Commissioner amendments.
I would move the amendments to House Bill 2222, dated May 6, 1985, provided by the Corporate Division.
Representative Bellamy moves the amendments from the Corporation Division, dated May 6, 1985, to House Bill 2222. Discussion. Do members want a few more minutes to review these?
Well,
Representative Springer?
I know that you've identified three sets of amendments. Those are in the package. I note that apparently in a letter addressed to you by Mr. McCulley, there was a concern about an impact on the certain members of the Agricultural Cooperative Council. It was his understanding that perhaps these amendments address that concern. Is that the case, Ms. Edwards?
Yes, Representative Springer, and I just met with him in the hall earlier today and showed him what we did, and you know, I believe he's satisfied.
Okay, he's nodding affirmatively. Thank you, I appreciate that. Just also, sure. Mr. Chair, Tom Gilbert has corresponded with me and members of the committee on several occasions. Do you know if these amendments, how do they deal with Mr. Gilbert's concerns?
Yes, Representative Springer, we have taken care of all of his concerns but one, which I can discuss with the committee, and he had thought maybe it would be appropriate to put into another bill. If you like, I'll go ahead and discuss it. It has to do with the evidentiary value of the documents in our office. normally, records such as ours are admissible to prove such things as they were filed. The corporation was created, for example. Our admissibility statute in Chapter 56 goes farther and says that our records can be introduced to prove the contents of those records. That means, in effect, I can put any self-serving kind of thing in a document, file it with our office, and it's now admissible in spite of any hearsay kinds of objections. I think Mr. Gilbert has correctly pointed out that the current law goes farther than perhaps it should. Our dilemma in our position on that, I might say the members of the corporate bar are concerned about his amendments because they feel that things that they would like to prove that are relatively uncontroversial or easily proved by a record, such as who was the president of a corporation. He has discussed the amendments before, and they've opposed that. Our position is that we're primarily ministerial, trying to get the papers processed expediently, in that a policy issue is the value in terms of evidence of our records is not one we ought to be dealing with.
Okay, I appreciate that comment, and I guess Mr. Berea will be in contact with Mr. Gilbert if, in fact, there's another vehicle to deal with Mr. Gilbert's problem, but I appreciate that clarification. Thank you.
Further questions or discussions on the amendments of May 6th? A few more minutes. Is there any objection to the amendments? Not, they're adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
At this point in time, I would feel comfortable in moving House Bill 2222 as amended to the full committee with the caveat that at that time I would most likely move the Attorney General's amendments. I want to study them just a little bit more, but I think we could. They're simple enough, we could move them in full committee if the committee members knew that that was going to come about. I do not want to wait another work session on this bill for fear it will grow again. Got to get going on it.
I've just had a moment to look at the AG's amendments, and maybe Mr. Wood and I need to talk about this later outside this hearing, but it looks like it's a step in the direction of trying to get a handle on bingo and lotto games, and I agree with that. I guess I would have preferred the bingo bill that passed last session as rather than take a half step towards regulation, which I think it's a commendable half step. I'd rather we went towards the concept the legislature embraced last session. I guess that's probably not possible to do, but I guess that's a comment I have at this point. And Mr. Wood, perhaps you and I should chat a bit before this comes up before full committee.
Be happy to, Representative
Springer. So, Springer, are you in sync with Representative Bellamy? Is that what I'm hearing? The approach we ought to take?
My motion will be to move it as is, but in full committee, I may very well suggest these amendments.
Okay. I'll discuss that also with Representative Bellamy. Thank you.
Representative Bellamy has moved House Bill 2222 to the full committee as amended for the due pass recommendation. Discussion. Clerk will call the roll.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Bunn?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye.
Kravetsky?
Aye. Motion's adopted, and with that goes the caveat that we will take another look at full committee at the Department of Justice amendments. Thank you for your testimony and spending your afternoon with us.
Moving right along.
We'll return to the order of the agenda. I can find my agenda. 2216.
That's one of those bills that can grow each time. 2216.
We have.
Which were the two bills that we tabled, Mr. Chair? Do you remember?
Yes. 2511, 2824.
exactly go over this, Mr. Chairman?
Sorry.
Did you go over this?
Yes.
No, it's from John E. Gordon, I just put it in the slides.
Mr. Chairman, you have in front of you a Hannah Gross copy of the bill. There are four sets of amendments, 16-1 through -4. I tried to point out where the amendments would go. And the first amendment is 2216-1, Mr. Perry's amendment, and that would exempt nursing homes and retirement homes from the bill. The second amendment, 2216-2, is the Department of Justice amendment, and it further modifies the bill. 2216-3 is Mr. Dunn's amendment, and that would exempt higher education foundations and community colleges from the bill. 2216-4 is Mr. Evie's amendment, and it was basically a clarification on some terminology on the formula for fees. Also, I will pass out in 1 second another set of Mr. Evie's amendments talking about a sliding fee based on total receipts. So we have at least five sets of amendments. Make that six, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bond.
I would move what is identified as Amendment 2216-1.
Representative Bunn moves Legislative Council Amendments 2216-1, dated 4-1-85. Representative Bunn.
In looking at whether or not nursing homes and retirement homes should be included in this bill, I looked at several things, and I'm familiar with some of the private nursing homes and retirement homes in my own district, although I have no representation involvement. They are inspected and dealt with by a number of state and or federal agencies in the operation of their facilities. Now, those are not, in one sense, directly related to the kind of control that occurs here. In addition, there is a private right of action if there's any misconduct. And as a practical matter, I can see no compelling need for those private care facilities to be included under here other than one sole purpose, and that is revenue generation. And if that is the primary purpose, I think we ought not to have them here. If there were some compelling need for them to be here, then I would support their being here, but there just isn't, in my opinion.
Maybe I should ask Mr. Laybourne from the Department of Justice if he cares to respond. I hope you're getting extra pay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ross Laybourne, Assistant Attorney General with the Oregon Department of Justice. I think, Representative Bunn, my major concern is how we go from here if we exempt this group on the notion that other of their activities are regulated someplace else by state or federal government. What happens, you know, when the next industry comes in? Do we have a basis for saying or distinguishing the nursing home and the retirement homes from the next group that comes in and says, well, we're regulated over here? If we do, then I don't have any problem with that. If we don't, what I see is just very quickly that this statute will look like the tax code, where every industry comes in and says, we want an exemption for whatever reason. You have, on one hand, the proposals to increase the exemptions. On the other hand, you have Mr. Eby's proposal, I believe, which is to say that let's cut back the exemptions and broaden the fee base and broaden the groups that are covered. I don't have strong opinions one way or the other. I do think that, you know, we certainly don't know anything at this point about the nursing home industry from the standpoint of the activities that I regulate. I would give you some a hypothetical example, however, based on a case that I'm now handling involving, surprisingly, an educational institution, which is actually exempt from the registration and reporting requirements, but for which we have common law and other statutory authority. In that case, we have a situation where the nonprofit charitable organization decided that it wanted to sell to a for-profit entity. And in observing and reviewing the terms of that sale, we found there to be self-dealing and that the terms of the sale were very unfair, in our estimation, to the nonprofit charitable organization. And just last week, I filed suit in that case because I believe that in the long run, the charity may be out something in the neighborhood of $150,000. You know, that's the type of thing that I don't see anybody else regulating if we aren't regulating under this statute.
Representative Bunn.
Mr. Chairman, to respond, concerning the question of if this group is regulated elsewhere, then what keeps us from exempting other groups that are regulated elsewhere? Actually, if we can show over a period of time, this session, next session, and other sessions, that there is no real compelling need for a large segment of this group to be covered under the Attorney General's office, I would move to move them away from that. We have nursing homes and senior care homes have to answer to an ombudsman, Department of Health. They have to show financial stability, a number of things that show quality control that, as a practical matter, is going to make this kind of review unnecessary. And I understand very clearly the desire to include as many people in the pool as possible. You can just spread the dollars. But we could bring 15 other groups in that didn't need coverage and cover them and cut the costs in half again. Question is, do we need, from a public policy standpoint, to have these groups covered, nursing homes, senior care homes, by the Attorney General's office in terms of policy and benefit to the public? And the answer from my standpoint is no. It generates more dollars and spreads the cost, but that's not a policy basis for including these people. I would, in fact, argue that some of the arts groups and others should be pulled out in the future. I think they have no business being here, and that would be my desire for the next session. But I think it's good policy. I want to get the same place Mr. Eby does, but from a different approach. And I'm, in fact, going to support at least one of his amendments to reduce some fees. But I think we ought to exempt those that there isn't a justifiable reason for putting in there. And we can't explain to our nursing home operators or our senior citizen care operations why there is a compelling public policy that they should be here.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
I asked the member last time to go back to his group and discuss. I guess I just would somewhat philosophically disagree. I said we're not talking about a large number of nursing homes in this bill. But, you know, the same argument was there was never any need to monitor funeral homes and grave sites until this last year. And I guess what I'm saying is that there's a certain amount of situation here where, sure, they may not have a problem now, but if they're out there raising money through charitable organizations, I don't see a compelling need to say that any organization that's going to raise money, if some are going to have to register, they all ought to have to register in the simple form that they're going to require. I think it would be to their benefit to get in the habit of filling that out now rather than waiting for a barrage of problems if a problem develops.
Representative Bunn.
I don't recall ever saying that funeral homes or cemeteries shouldn't be regulated.
No.
I'd like to point that out.
That was my statement, but I want you to know that the nursing home person has not gotten back to me, and he is not here today. And it'd be very interested, I would be very interested to know what his response was, and maybe you know.
Well, the only final distinction I would make is that the funeral homes and the cemeteries are not regulated anywhere near the current degree that nursing homes and senior citizen homes are. And the kinds of protections that the Attorney General's office provides here are, as a practical matter, provided through the other regulations. You know, we've heard in State and Federal Affairs Committee that on water slides, the Department of Health needs to take care of them, Department of Commerce needs to take care of them, and we'd stack one regulation right on top of the other. And I just hate to see us file an additional level of regulation that requires additional reporting that does no one any good.
But I would say you're talking about regulations that have nothing to do with their ability to raise money through a charitable organization.
But they have to show that financial responsibility and that financial information in their certification and in their development as a nursing home facility.
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, yes, I'd like to address a question to Representative Bunn that I heard you comment on but maybe didn't hear the complete response. Then what do we do with other groups that have contacted me that would also like to be exempt? I mean, what do we do with the social service groups and the arts groups? And where do we draw the line?
I would bring an amendment that moved every one of those out of this bill, that there was not a public policy reason for being there. The sole reason for them being there is economic need of the Attorney General's office. That's pure and simple what it is. There's no reason that those arts groups, after they've been established and have the public monitoring and the public review that they do and the scrutiny, for one moment should be covered by the Attorney General's office. We ought to be moving them all out of here. It's a waste of their money.
Then could we do that in terms of an amendment today?
Oh, if we can do it today, I'd be prepared to do it, or if we could set it over and do it later. If it's the committee's sentiment or will.
Representative Spare.
I'm warming up very quickly to Representative Bunn's approach, certainly in terms of this specific amendment, which I support. I think Mr. Perry and others made a good argument, and I think in terms of the policy decision that Representative Bunn has suggested, I'm willing to consider that very, very seriously. We're kind of at the point in this session where I don't know how much longer we can hesitate, though. We may be undertaking a little bit too large a task.
Well, that's why I didn't suggest going further now, because I just didn't know how much we could bite off.
I'm in support of Representative Bunn's motion from the beginning, I guess. I'm not sure exactly what we're saying, committee's saying. I mean, do we just work through these amendments now, or do we want some time to? Representative Peterson.
Well, I guess I maybe would like to get a sense of the committee's feeling about Mr. Eby's May 7th amendment, who actually cuts it off on page 2 after talking about religious purposes, as I understand, and avoids everything else.
I think Mr. Eby had to go one of several directions, and I can't speak for him, but I'd be interested in his comment. If they are faced with a situation where they're having to pay these dollars, it is legitimate for them to say, let's have as many others in similar circumstances pay the dollars with us. And that's exactly what they've done. And if you're going to maintain that approach, his amendments, I think, are wise. I'd be curious as to his reaction of if we went the other direction and moved some of them out of that control.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am John Eby. I'm Executive Vice President of Oregon Advocates for the Arts, and as a part of our membership statewide, there are about 100 nonprofit charitable organizations in the state. Those organizations are currently required to file with the Department of Justice on an annual basis and required to pay a fee with that filing. Our real bone of contention has not been with the requirement to file, but with the fee structure and with the inequity created by exemption for certain charitable organizations and not for others. The point is very well made that some of those nonprofit arts organizations have been around for the Oregon Shakespearean Festival, for example, for 50 years, files an annual report which does disclose its costs for raising dollars, and certainly is stable, and those organizations are run by community leaders in each instance, and it would be absolutely foolish for any of those organizations to do anything that was not totally above board in raising money, because that's a good part of their livelihood in providing services. At the same time, we really do not have a problem with the filing. Most of the filing now for our member organizations, particularly the larger ones, is of the 990 form that is filed anyway with the IRS. So they're, that's a process which is not too difficult anymore, and the Attorney General's office has been helpful in making that less burdensome. But certainly we feel that if others are exempted, there's good reason to exempt those organizations which also are stable and have a good record. I don't know how you draw the line there, where the Attorney General's office has to have information on an